Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilo Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Drs. Foss and Chagpar welcome Dr. Lajos Pusztai. Dr. Pusztai is director of the Breast Cancer Research Group and co-director of the Cancer Genetics Research Program. He also leads the Breast Cancer Medical Oncology Team at Smilo Cancer Hospital. Here's Francine Foss.
Can you start off by telling us a little bit about your background? Where were you from and how long have you been here at the Smilo Cancer Center?
I'm a medical oncologist. I completed my medical school in Budapest, Hungary, and subsequently received a PhD degree from the University of Oxford. I completed my medical training in the University of Rochester as an intern and subsequently had my medical oncology fellowship at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. I stayed on faculty for 15 years, and I have joined the Yale Cancer Center on August the 1st to lead the breast cancer research efforts.
And we're delighted to have you, Lajos. So tell us a little bit more about your vision for the things that you plan to do now that you're here at Yale.
What we would like to develop is a portfolio of clinical trials and research efforts that really focus around patients and around the idea that we want to improve the current standard of care to the next level.
So you're particularly interested in breast cancer now, obviously, and I wonder, have you always been interested in breast cancer? And what is it about breast cancer that you find particularly interesting that's kept you in this field?
So I've become involved with breast cancer research during my training for my PhD degree at the University of Oxford. I had the good fortune and privilege to work with an outstanding clinical investigator, Professor Adrian Harris, who is the head of the oncology department at Oxford. He's a very well-respected investigator in breast cancer, and he was the one who actually steered me towards breast cancer research and treatment.
You talk about cancer genetics, and you're heading up this cancer genetics program. Can you tell us a little bit about that with respect to the breast cancer program here at Smilo?
So we would like to broaden the clinical trial portfolio that is currently available for our patients at Smilo and include studies which really aim to improve on our current therapeutic modalities and raise it to the next level. So our goal is to really move the breast cancer disease paradigm closer to what has happened to childhood leukemias. By enrolling most children in clinical trials, childhood leukemias have become an essentially curable disease. And I think this is attainable and achievable in breast cancer as well. In certain subsets, such as HER2-positive breast cancer, we are very close to this goal.
So tell us a little bit more about how does genomics work? I mean, what is this concept of personalized medicine, and how are you going to take this genomics information and translate it into trials that come up with therapies for individual patients?
So genomics is the study of the DNA of cancer. And we increasingly recognize that there is a lot of information that we can learn by studying the genome of cancers. We could identify cancers which may be particularly sensitive to certain therapies or which are inherently worse or better prognosis. Some of these tests have already made it to the clinic, and one of the important advances in breast cancer management in the past 5-10 years have been the introduction of a genomic test, Oncotype DX, into the clinic. This is an assay where you measure the presence or absence of 21 genes, and based on the results, one could identify ladies who are high risk for recurrence of cancer if they receive only surgery or hormonal therapy, and therefore they would also benefit from additional treatments such as chemotherapy. So we would like to expand on the portfolio of similar genomic tests and maybe move the field towards being able to select the appropriate chemotherapy regimen, not just generally being able to tell who would benefit from chemotherapy, but being able to tell who would benefit from a particular type of chemotherapy.
So, Laz, there's been a lot of research in breast cancer focusing mainly on, like, the estrogen receptor, the progesterone receptor, which I think we're all familiar with, and then HER2 was really the first important gene in breast cancer, and I think a lot of patients have heard, you know, that word. So you're talking now about this new panel of genes. Can you tell us how that is going to help? Is that going to expand on what we already know? And are there specific genes in that panel that women are going to start familiarizing themselves with that are going to be really important in terms of treatment?
So probably the genes which predict someone's outcome are not the same than the genes that we could actually use to develop drugs against. So one of the remarkable insights that have happened in the past few years in breast cancer research is the discovery of a very large number of drug targets, novel targets, very similar to the estrogen receptor, the HER2, and the progesterone receptor. So these targets include remarkably interesting things, such as the androgen receptor and molecules which we have not been aware of in the past. So really what the field is facing now, the challenge is to how to manage this plethora, this really large number of potential drug targets, because it looks like that we will need many more drugs than the few that we currently have. And each of the drugs would probably work for only a relatively small subset of patients.
So what you're trying to do then is you're trying to figure out, by looking at the genome of each of these cancers, which targets each cancer has so that you can appropriately target your new therapies to them?
Right, so then that is correct. So basically there are three things that one would like to accomplish. One is to use the existing drugs and drugs which are coming into the clinic as investigational drugs more efficiently and better. The second thing that we would like to accomplish is to have better tests to really select patients for the available drugs. And the third thing is to really develop new drugs to broaden the portfolio of agents that we could use to defeat this cancer.
We're talking about looking at the genetics of the tumors in these women. Can you tell us how difficult is that process, and are all women with breast cancer getting this genomic profiling done on their tumors?
So measurements are now quite easy, but the interpretation of the data is quite difficult. So we could get information on the presence or absence or the damage that may have happened to about 20,000 genes from a single biopsy specimen, from a needle biopsy. But the challenge is to really interpret the results.
So all women coming in, say, to SMILE or to other hospitals with breast cancer, having their biopsies done, are their tissues consistently being analyzed, and how many genes, you mentioned 21 genes, how many genes would you need to look at in order to tell us, say, what treatment would be optimal for a woman? Put this into a perspective.
So most of this work is research, which implies that it's not done routinely. But some of these tests are actually routinely used because they have an established value. And I have referred to the Oncotype DX, which is one of these genomic tests that we use very commonly, and so do our colleagues in the community, because it's a commercially available assay. It is used to identify the woman with estrogen receptor, or ER-positive breast cancer, who would require chemotherapy in addition to surgery and hormonal therapy. There is a lot of research to develop similar additional tests, but these are more at the level of research, and they are not routinely available for patients because they have not proven their value yet.
So I think a lot of women get confused between genetics and genomics. So how does BRCA play into what you're talking about, or is that something totally different?
So these are largely overlapping concepts, but there is some simple way to distinguish them. So genetics is really studying inherited, hereditary traits of an individual or the cancer that arises in that background in a given individual. So BRCA is a mutation that some individuals inherit from their parents, and that unfortunately predisposes them to develop breast cancer. Genomics, on the other hand, is studying the cancer genome itself, which of course carries many of the inherited abnormalities or the inherited variants that someone is born with, but also has additional abnormalities that is unique to that cancer, and you wouldn't see it in any other cell or tissue of that person.
We talk about personalized medicine and looking at the individual tumors in patients. Can you tell us how common the genes are between, say, one patient and another, and how likely it is that, say, if you examine 100 women with breast cancer that you'll find some common gene that would be important for breast cancer?
So one of the most exciting, but at the same time most daunting observations in the past literally 1 or 2 years have been the realization that whereas some genes are commonly affected and commonly sort of damaged in breast cancer, the vast majority of the damage that we detect in an individual cancer is unique. It's almost specific to that individual or really affects only a small minority of the woman, maybe 4%. With breast cancer. So this is a challenge with regards to developing drugs against these relatively small subsets of patients. But nevertheless, that's a challenge that I think we will have to rise to.
So with that challenge then comes the daunting task of how do you design clinical trials to look for those genetic or genomic mutations in small populations? How are you going to wrap your arms around that as you develop your clinical trials portfolio?
So I arrived at the Smilow Cancer Hospital 4 weeks ago, and one of my top priorities is to really develop a clinical trial that would exactly accomplish what you have referred to, that we would roll out a program where we do a biopsy of the cancer and subject that to genomic and genetic testing. And based on what we observe in the individual's tumor, we would triage or refer that patient to a particular clinical trial that would actually target or use a drug that would target the given abnormality. So this would require several components to be put in place, including the protocol to obtain a biopsy and analyze it. And we have made great progress, and we obtained the endorsement of some technology companies who would actually provide us this testing service. The other component is to assemble a portfolio of clinical trials. And because of the diversity of clinical trial options, we probably will not be able to have a clinical trial locally for every individual. But we are working on a website or an information base where we could identify clinical trial options if there is none available for a particular individual at our site, to refer this person to a hospital or to a clinic where the appropriate clinical trial may be available. So we would like to broaden our portfolio to offer most of our patients a study that makes sense in the context of the genomic abnormalities that we detect in the cancer. But if we don't have this option, we also would like to provide information where to go to find this option.
So, Leos, this all depends on being able to get those tumors and do the genomic profiling, I would say, fairly quickly before you have to make a treatment decision for that patient. Can you talk a little bit about how quickly these tests are being done?
So there are a number of technical and regulatory issues around this question. But the simple answer is that the goal would be to get the results within 7 to 10 days, including biopsying the tumor and performing the test.
Well, that's fantastic, and it sounds like there's a lot of work going on really to advance personalized medicine in breast cancer at Yale. Right now, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about clinical research for breast cancer with our guest, Dr. Lajos Pusztai.
There are over 12 million cancer survivors in the United States right now, and the numbers keep growing. Completing treatment for cancer is a very exciting milestone, but cancer and its treatment can be a life-changing experience. The return to normal activities and relationships may be difficult, and cancer survivors face other long-term side effects of cancer, including heart problems, osteoporosis, fertility issues, and an increased risk of second cancers. Resources for cancer survivors are available at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the one at Yale Cancer Center, to keep cancer survivors well and focused on healthy living. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. More information available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Anish Chagpar, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Dr. Francine Foss, and our guest, Dr. Lajos Pusztai. We're discussing clinical research and trials for breast cancer. So, Lajos, before the break, you were telling us about some remarkable advances that are happening in this era of genomics and personalized medicine for breast cancer. Can you kind of give us a little bit of a framework of how far we've come in the last decade, 2 decades? What do you think are the most important advances that have happened so far?
So I think it's very important to recognize that today, if a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer, on average, her chance to be cured from this disease is around 85%. So this is really due to the advances in chemotherapy, hormonal therapy, targeted therapies, which were all driven by increased understanding of breast cancer. And of course, in improvements in surgical techniques and radiation oncology, which made these interventions more tolerable and less disfiguring and toxic for women. In terms of specific advances, there have been a number of remarkably effective new drugs that has become available for HER2-positive breast cancer, and they are moving increasingly into the curative setting. So pertuzumab has been approved by the Food and Drug Administration a few weeks ago to treat metastatic breast cancer with HER2-positive disease because it prolongs the time before the cancer will progress and even prolongs the life of women with this disease. This drug is now being tested in a curative setting in earlier stage disease. Another HER2-targeted therapy, T-DM1, is also showed remarkable activity in HER2-positive breast cancer and is also being tested very shortly in the curative treatment setting. Similarly, for ER-positive cancer, we have an entirely new class of drugs which are available, which are mTOR inhibitors. They block a signaling pathway, a mechanism how cells communicate with each other, and this particular pathway contributes to resistance developing against hormonal blockade. So by combining these newer drugs with traditional anti-hormone therapy, one could actually improve the outcome of hormone-positive cancers at a lot less toxicity than we could do with chemotherapy. One of the unmet niches, though, remains triple-negative breast cancer, and a lot of research efforts focus around this disease to really make progress in this disease subset as well.
And what's new in that group of patients, in the triple negative patient, what do they have to look forward to as far as future potential treatments?
So what will work in this disease subset is a little bit unclear, but certainly there is some excitement that maybe new therapies that are directed towards improving the immune response against cancer might actually work for these ladies. So we hope to start several trials in that niche within the next several months at the Smilow Cancer Hospital. These new class of immune-boosting agents have shown some substantial activity in lung cancer as well as in very difficult-to-treat and cure cancers like melanoma.
So it sounds like there's a lot of, you know, really intriguing and exciting advances in terms of the treatment of breast cancer, both that have happened as well as that are right on the forefront now. What about treatments to prevent cancer? Tell us a little bit about agents that we can use that might be able to prevent breast cancers from forming in the first place.
As a medical oncologist, I'm sometimes surprised to find out from my patients that many ladies are not aware that there are drugs which could reduce the risk of developing breast cancer. In other words, they could be used to prevent the development of breast cancer. And they are quite effective. They could reduce the risk of developing breast cancer by 50% to 60% compared to not taking these drugs. These drugs come with relatively minor toxicities, and two of these have been approved by the Food and Drug Administration, including tamoxifen and raloxifen, to prevent breast cancer. And another class of hormone-blocking agents called aromatase inhibitors also showed some very promising activity in clinical trials. In particular, exemestane has been shown to reduce the risk of developing breast cancer by at least 60%. However, this drug has not been approved for this indication.
So, Leos, what patients would be candidates for that kind of an approach, for the prevention approach?
So, probably the majority of women who are over 60 would qualify for treatment with these drugs unless they are at risk for side effects from them, including osteoporosis, because some of these drugs could actually promote osteoporosis. Others, on the other hand, would actually treat it. For example, raloxifene is also approved as a treatment for osteoporosis. So for the same drug, one could get a dual benefit, a reduction in the risk of breast cancer and also treatment for osteoporosis. Another important contraindication against these drugs would be blood clots, history of blood clots or thromboembolic events, because these drugs may increase the risk, particularly tamoxifen, for such adverse events.
How do I know if I'm a woman who's at high risk of developing breast cancer that I should take one of these drugs? Or should everybody, once they reach a certain age, take these drugs?
I think it's important to be aware of these options. And this is a question that probably would need require some specific discussions. And what I would like to promote is to really bring this question up with a gynecologist or a primary care physician or with an oncologist if someone sees an oncologist for some other reason. There are also publicly available websites where one could actually estimate your own risk of developing breast cancer. But I think the best approach would be to discuss this with a healthcare provider. Generally, the feeling among the medical oncology community is that these prevention drugs are underutilized.
So what are some of the factors that would increase a woman's risk of developing cancer?
So age is a very important risk factor. The older we get, the higher the risk that we would develop breast cancer. Prior history of previously cured breast cancer is another risk factor. Family history, particularly multiple family members with breast cancer or breast and ovarian cancer, are also risk factors.
So in terms of a woman, say, who's had breast cancer, and we're picking up a lot of these breast cancers early now because of mammography, should that woman stay on treatment after their definitive, say, surgical procedure or their treatment for breast cancer? It used to be that we kept women on tamoxifen for a period of time. What are we doing now with those women? Are we keeping them on therapy? Is there a point when they can stop that treatment?
So there's increasing evidence that continuing with some anti-estrogen therapy, even for an extended period of time, beyond 5 years, which used to be the standard of length for tamoxifen therapy, is actually beneficial. So the trend is to use these drugs for longer and longer periods. There is very good clinical trial data which suggests that after completion of 5 years of tamoxifen, if a woman continues with another type of hormonal drug, that would further reduce the risk of a new breast cancer or a recurrence of the breast cancer.
So, you know, one of the things that's striking me as we're talking here today is that so many of the advances that you bring up and so many of the things that we're now able to cure, we've done because there have been women who have been brave enough to participate in clinical trials. And one of your missions is really to enhance this portfolio of clinical trials to drive the field forward. What do you say to women who are wondering about or fearful about participating in clinical trials? How do you approach that?
I think you are absolutely correct. None of the advances that we claim for ourselves as clinical investigators, as scientists, could have been made without the sacrifices and the participation of patients. So we try to design clinical trials which require the minimum amount of sacrifice, but oftentimes there is still some discomfort and some risk involved with clinical trial participation. Nevertheless, we would like to create a clinical trial infrastructure and system which really would provide the best possible care for a patient in the context of a clinical trial, so that in addition to receiving the current standard of care, people will have an option to receive something in addition to it, on top of it. So we would like to say and feel in a convincing way that a clinical trial is the best option at almost any clinical setting for a woman.
Leos, do you think that most women are aware of clinical trials? Do you think that most women know where to look for the information about available clinical trials? And can we do better with that?
I think we certainly could do better than we are doing currently. I think it's very important to be aware of clinical trials. The government has rolled out a very important clinical trial website, which is a website where all the ongoing clinical trials are registered. It's not easy to navigate it, but I think this is a very good step to the right direction. And I think that it will become increasingly easier and easier to use for both patients and physicians. But I think being aware of clinical trials is a very important step towards improving someone's chance of cure for breast cancer, and particularly participating in studies which offer you something in addition to what is the current best standard.
So, Leos, another question I have is that there are now a lot of women out there that have had breast cancer, that are cured from breast cancer, that are being followed. And the question is, are there clinical trials that those women could be potentially be enrolled in? And is it possible that those women could get involved in some of the genomic research that you're doing, the women that have already had and been cured from breast cancer?
Of course, there are many challenges that women who have been cured from breast cancer are cancer-free for many years or decades face. And these challenges all represent clinical study opportunities. So unfortunately, individuals who had breast cancer remain at risk for developing another breast cancer or even other types of cancers. So to identify who are at risk, we really need more genomic research or genetic research into what genes may predispose individuals to develop cancer.
Anise, you're a breast cancer surgeon and you'll be working with Leos. I guess it would be interesting to hear your perspective in terms of the role of a multidisciplinary approach as we start looking more at genomics and then at the practical aspect of how we actually, you know, operate on these women and what happens next.
Yeah, so Francine, you and I have talked at some length about the breast center and multidisciplinary care in terms of breast cancer management. It was one of my greatest pleasures to help recruit Leos here. He's certainly just brilliant and wonderful and a great addition to our team. We actually work very closely together, medical oncology, surgical oncology, plastic surgery, imaging, pathology, genetics, nursing, social work, nutrition, physical therapy, survivorship. Leos, tell us a little bit more about your concept of that multidisciplinary unit and how you see that functioning.
I think our shared goal is to make sure that as many women are cured from breast cancer as possible and push this possibility further out. So the cure is like a little bit like a jigsaw puzzle. It comes from many different angles and many different specialists would need to be participating in it, including a surgeon, radiation oncologist, medical oncologist, and each piece needs to be at the right place at the right time in order to bring about the best possible outcome.
Dr. Leos Pustai is director of the Breast Cancer Research Group and co-director of the Cancer Genetics Research Program. He also leads the Breast Cancer Medical Oncology Team at Smilo Cancer Hospital. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.